The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You're listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and it's great to have you on board with your continued listenership and support. All right, then. We're in Poti, in the middle of the Republic of Georgia, getting ready for the Pro event, the second edition of the Pro event. And having just arrived recently from Western France, I'm delighted to have on this podcast episode, as we hear a few practice sets going on in the background, we have Miss Sadie Ferguson. How are you doing, Sadie?
Good, thanks, Tony. I'm very happy to be here and happy to be on the podcast with you.
All right, then. So, Sadie Ferguson, you're a rather new skier onto the pro water ski scene, and you're a stranger to most folks there, and having never heard too much about you apart from maybe your position in the World Championships last season with that personal best score that you had. But so let's delve in a little bit deeper. Let's find out. Who is Sadie Ferguson, and where does she come from, and how did she get into the sport?
Again, I'm Sadie Ferguson. I'm from a small country town in Roma, Queensland, Australia. Born and raised there, and I learnt to ski on a little river called the St. George River. Spent a lot of time on that river barefooting, kneeboarding, you know, all the things, and then progressed into water skiing when I was about 4 or 5, and been in the tournament scene ever since then, and have fell in love with it. But all in all, I'm just a small country kid that's trying to make a way and follow a dream.
Fantastic. I couldn't have scripted that one any better. Just to let you know, we don't have any scripts here whatsoever. I mean that was beautifully crafted, beautifully answered. I don't even have a script, and I can't even measure up to what Sadie Ferguson just said there in the way that she said it. Probably part of the reason why you've been brought on board a little bit on TWBC to do the dockside for the events in which you're not participating in.
Yeah, no, I'm a bit witty. I catch up real quick, and I like to answer some questions with a bit of taste, you know, Tony. Something you're good at?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that, but I mean, I'll take any compliments that come my way. So who persuaded you to get into this whole water ski tournament, water ski lark? I mean it's one thing to be skiing on a river somewhere in Queensland, Australia, but it's quite another to pit yourself against the world's best on a week to week basis. So let's try and bridge the gap from there to now.
Yeah. So from the river, my dad was a social skier. Then my mum got us into tournament water skiing, and we actually met Jody Skipper. I don't know if anyone knows that name from way back.
Yes, I certainly know that name. I mean, she skied in Australia in the junior ranks in the middle to late 80s, and our paths crossed. I've crossed a few times, you know, but the first time I saw her was in Milano in Italy in the mid 80s.
Yeah, incredible athlete back in the day, and still, you know, we all strive to be, you know, someone of that caliber, and she is the one that actually got me into water skiing and taught me sort of the basics of everything. And then from there, moved to the sunny coast, and Emma Shears was then a part of bridging the gap into my career, and Ryan and Sarah Green, all the big names from Australia. But yeah, so they're the ones that got me into sort of where I'm at now and to the level I'm at now, and I'm very grateful to all those people. But incredible athletes that sort of helped me move from just a river girl to a course girl, and being here where I'm at now.
Okay, so a lot of the folks out there are primarily identify you as a slalomer. That's probably where you make your bread and butter, more or less around about this time. But are you still an overall skier, or are you still just plugging away with slalom for the time being, at least?
For the people that don't know me, I was originally a jumper. I started, you know, my career kind of took off with jump. I was a junior world jump champion in 2018, and that's where things sort of started to turn for me. And I am still an overall skier to this day. Unfortunately, I did my knee quite a few years back and kind of nudged my confidence in jump a bit. But yeah, still an overall skier, and hopefully back on the skis for Worlds, and see where we can put ourselves on the overall list.
And a tough one to boot, because I think I was around about at the time of seeing you compete when you sustained that knee injury. That was at the in Santa Rosa Beach, Junior Worlds. I think it was like the last
It was a combined Worlds due to COVID.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
The under 21 and junior worlds. But yeah, it was the last day of Famils, official Famils, my last jump. Took the jump, came off the top of the ramp, and in my head I was like, yep, okay, we're ready for the worlds. And you know, as soon as my feet touched the water, my knee unfortunately gave way, and it was super unfortunate. In that event I was a favorite, so very devastating. But nonetheless, again, a country kid, and I strapped the knee up, and I had fully blown it out, ACL, meniscus, all the things, but I strapped my knee up, and I still slalomed in that junior worlds, which was an experience and super fun.
And the actual archive of that performance, you can still see to this day on the TWBC's YouTube channel archives. You know, do you ever go back and do any reminiscing of that, or are you just forward thinking, just go after it and leave the past to the past?
No, there's definitely times, you know, sometimes we. I'm going to say lose our confidence or something of the sort, and looking for a little bit of passion or something to push ourselves further forward. And that video for me, slaloming at that world, is actually something I go back to a fair bit, and I use it to help push me, find some motivation and some inspiration out of it, because there's a reason I strapped my knee up at that world, and it was because I loved the sport so much. I'd put so much into it that I'd come all the way from Australia to be at this world, and I wasn't just going to give up that easy. So I find a lot of inspiration in that performance that I put up there.
Well, along with your talents out in the water, you certainly got the gift of the gab. I tell you that, you know. I mean, before we even did this podcast, you know, Sadie came up to me and said, "What are we going to talk about? What are we going to do? You know, and like the questions and the responses are falling very, very neatly into place, I would say.
They are. Yeah, I was a little bit nervous, but you know, you make me quite comfortable. Thank you, Tony.
Why thank you. So we continue on into the pro realms right now. It's a little bit of a challenge being an Australian skier, because you're all the way down there, and like the center of the water ski world is all the way up here somewhere. So trying to be competitive is one thing, but to be competitive and to factor in all of the travel, staying weeks, months, sometimes years.
Yeah.
You know, away from home, you know, probably homesick, you know, and you know, I mean, that's got to factor into the whole deal, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty tough. But again, being in Australia, skiing isn't as easy as you might think. You know, we have definitely a lot of rivers and stuff, but having a course and a jump ramp and, you know, the capability of someone to drive or pin, being an overall skier, it's pretty difficult to train and find somewhere to train with the expenses. But so I've always spent time away from home. Being homesick, I do obviously miss my family, but I'm pretty used to being on the road. And it's hard to, you got to, you know, take 6 months overseas, prepare yourself, jet lag, all the things, get that rhythm back before the tournaments, and then all the travel in between each event. It's tough, but we do it because we love it, and we wouldn't change it.
Yes, yeah, you should definitely vote for this girl. If there's any media jobs going out there, public relations for tournament water skiing, definitely Sadie Ferguson should be towards the top of your list. So we're talking about your situation, what precipitated you being one of the world's top slalomers. Let's go back a little bit to your farm life. Yeah, because I mean, we're talking like outback.
Yes.
We're talking about Queensland. We're talking about Crocodile Dundee.
Red dirt country.
Yeah, red dirt country, you know. I mean, I know it's all cliche, you know, and you're probably sick to death, you know, having to fashion your responses into the preconceived notions that people have about being in Australia. So aside from skiing, what is or what was your family life like kind of growing up on the farm, as it were?
Incredible. I love my background. I love where I come from. So I grew up in Roma and went to school, just a normal public high school. Super cool experience. Very character building, being in a public school, but loved it nonetheless.
Character building is a euphemism for wrestling pigs.
Yeah, we did a lot of, you know, I have two brothers and a sister, and my mum's a hairdresser and my dad does many different things, but we run cattle, we have sheep, we have pet kangaroos, we have pet cows, like all of the things that you could think of we have. And you know, it's a I love it. I love it so much where I come from. I think it is exactly who I am.
Just think about like Yellowstone or Dutton Ranch.
Exactly.
You know, and then just throw some kangaroos and koalas and wallabies into the mix with the odd dingo that you have to fend off against.
100%. You know, my brother had a pet emu once. Like
an emu?
Yeah.
How can you raise an emu as a pet? Come on.
He found it and he took it upon himself that he was going to have this emu named Bob.
Bob.
No, so it is incredible, you know, being on the farm. It's very, very a privilege to have that background, and I'm lucky enough to have parents that have raised me with incredible work ethic, and I think that plays into me as an athlete today. You know, every athlete has to have a form of work ethic to be able to get to this level.
And certainly in Australia, because I mean the premier tournament that you have each year is Moomba.
Yes, it is Moomba. Well, I love Moomba. It's my favorite event. It is the twist of the tongue. You know, you never really know what you're going to get there, but nonetheless, I mean, all of the Americans and from every country, they fly over and they love to come and do this event. It's only a few days, but they all seem to do the trip every year, so that just says enough about it, I think.
Most certainly. And would it be fair to say that you've kind of like engineered your own slaloming and your own technique to kind of deal with situations that can and do inevitably come up in Moomba?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you're going to ski on the river, you can't have a tentative attitude. You've got to be all in, otherwise the river will eat you up. And I think that's something that I am quite good at. You know, if I make a mistake, I don't let it throw me off. I'm pretty good at getting back in the game and getting to work and trying to get through the pass. So I have that, I think, in my back pocket, which is really helpful. You know, you can't always get the perfect start to run the pass. And I'm someone, if I don't get the perfect start, I go, okay, let's get to work.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more. So you're kind of basing yourself in Western Europe, in France these days. What's the language barrier like there?
Yeah, so I'm in Borish Water Ski School with Will, and it's difficult, you know, being only an English speaker in a country where they generally only speak French. It's tough, but at the same time, it's again character building, and it's great for experience and eye opening. It's an eye opening experience of, you know, trying to learn to communicate with people through not words. It's tough, but I do love it, and I'm learning French. It's also very tough, French.
Yeah.
But no, I enjoy the experience of trying to work through those problems, you know.
Yeah, and there have been problems aplenty, and I think you're probably thinking
know
exactly where I'm headed, because prior to the Ricetto Pro, you're all set to drive across France, across southern France, from where you were in Burec, which is just outside Bordeaux, and not too long into that journey, calamity.
Yeah, that would be the word, Tony. That is the word. So I hired a car to drive myself from Burec to Ricetto, and about 4 hours into my trip, I kind of heard a big bang driving.
Ah.
And I thought, oh, I've blown a tire. No problem. My dad's taught me how to change a tire. I can do this. No problem. And about 2 seconds later, I went, I don't think that's a tire. My engine blew up on the middle of the highway, in the middle of France. No idea where I was. Phone's on 2%. All the things you don't want to happen are happening, but that's okay. You know, put the hazards on, pulled over. Then my next problem was, you know, the SOS buttons on the side of the road. I pressed that button. Anyone speak English? No, no one speaks English. So then I had the problem of, I was on the side of the highway and it's quite dangerous here. You know, there's a whole heap of precautions you have to take in Europe of putting out cones and wearing a high-vis jacket. Yeah. And unfortunately, my hire car did not have any of those things. So
great.
I was just stranded on the side of the road trying to talk to these SOS guys to try and come and help me. But yeah, anyways, long story short, I got in contact with Vince, lifesaver, I will say. And he managed to help me get from where I was to Geneva. And he kindly, off the water off his back, came and picked me up in Geneva, about a 3.5-hour trip, and then had another 4.5-hour drive home because the tunnel was closed. So all things that could go wrong did go wrong, but we got through it and we made it to Rosetto with just a few hours of sleep.
Well, part of that journey was actually having to utilize the train. Which you probably weren't all that experienced in.
No, we don't have train stations in Roma. so I was
Brisbane, maybe, but Roma,
very,
no.
Very inexperienced on the train side of things, but. And, you know, everything's in another language as well. So, you know, scrambling, running around this train station, trying to find where I'm supposed to be. And I, by the time I got into the train station, there was only one train I could take to get me to Geneva. And I had 2 minutes from when I got out of the taxi to get on that train, and I had no idea where I was. But, you know, problem solver, and if there's a way, I will find it. So I
so you got your luggage, your ski bag. You know, it's not just a case of you just hoofing it with a backpack. It's the other stuff that has to go along with it, right?
Yes, exactly. Dragging that big ski bag and a clothes bag, it's not easy.
All right, then. So so you managed to get on the train from Lyon,
yep.
To Geneva. You got that part, but you briefly alluded to the whole whole adventure of having to navigate the tunnel on Mont Blanc. But calamity once again. Vince, although he was able to get you from Geneva Station, wasn't able to get you through the same tunnel that he came out from, which basically added, I don't know, how many hours?
I think it was about an extra hour or hour and a half that I added onto the trip. Once he went through, he sort of paid the ticket and she said, one way or return? And he was like, no, return, please. Like, he wanted to come back through. And she was like, the tunnel's closed at, I think it was like 10 p.m. or something like that. And he was like, oh, no.
Uh-oh.
So that's okay. It didn't deter him. He kept coming and we just had to sort of go around the mountain, which is pretty unfortunate, especially when you sort of around the 2 a.m. mark. It's pretty tiring.
Yeah, and but you managed to get through all of those obstacles. You managed to get through that closed tunnel, found a tunnel that was open. You managed to get to Novara. Which is just outside Milan, which is where pretty much where Rosetto is. So walking down to the slalom dock and getting ready to go, what was your mind doing at that point?
Well, when I woke up, first of all, I'll say I've had worse hangovers, you know. My head was pounding, my eyes wouldn't open. But, walking down to the slalom dock, you know, something like that, I thrive off of. I love it. For me, it's like, okay, this is my time to shine. When the cards are stacked against me, that's when I like to show up and go, okay, I can do this. And, you know, it was my first round and I went out and I didn't put out a phenomenal score, but I did go out and I got through my 38 and I got 2 at 10.7, which was the goal. It was the goal just to get a solid score, to get myself in a good spot to make it through to finals. And it's exactly what I did to get through to finals. So I love it when the cards are stacked against me, Tony. It's when I really like to turn the lights on and go, let's do it.
Yes, and you've definitely shown elements of that in the past, you know, going all the way back to the Junior Worlds, you know, this little escapade that you've had here. And are there any other stories that have uh, that that you can recall, you know, that have tested your abilities to overcome adversity?
I mean, everyone's got stories. I've got plenty of them, but none of them are super as interesting as you would think. I know my first Worlds, it's actually not a super fun story, but my first Worlds that I won, the Junior Worlds in 2018 at Sesenya, my family came over with me. I think I was about 14 or 15. Again, it was a Worlds where no one knew who I was. I was just that kid that just showed up. And I, you know, in my head, I was like, you know, it'd be really cool to make a final, but little did I know that I would come out standing on top. But yeah, no, we arrived at that world. My mom and my dad were with me, my sister. And the day before final started, my brother actually got into a car accident.
Oh.
Yeah, so super devastating story. His best mate passed, but my dad had to leave and we all were going to go home. And my brother rang and he said, stay and ski for Bo, who was the guy that passed. And we did. I stayed and I skied and I won. And, you know, that adversity, I think, is exactly who I am as a person and keeps it up there.
All right, then. So coming into this season, you actually created for yourself a new personal best in the last season at Rochetto. So 5 at 10.75, is that what was that your personal best?
Yep.
And it still is to this day, right?
It is, yeah. It's still my personal best. I'm still chasing that one down. You know, you get to 5, you got to get to 6. But, I came to Rochetto in 2025 and I made the finals and went out there. And my mentality going into it was, I've got nothing to lose. You either come 8th or you're somewhere on that podium. And
you ended up scoring the worst position possible on the slalomed to a 4th place finish. Just a smidge behind.
Yeah, just a step off the podium. You know, I put the score out early, pretty early, so that was pretty cool. And I got to sit there and feel all the feels while I'm watching every other girl ski. And Ali Nicholson actually came out and she didn't get a great start at 10.7. And she, you know, used that strength that she has and she got all the way through to 5 and she got 5.5. So she just pipped me off the podium. But it was a really cool experience and the emotions that I felt is exactly why we do it. You know, that suspense is what makes it so fun and so thrilling.
So we've already heard some of your inspirations going forward. I mean, Jody Skipper and Emma Shears Haberman, you know, that have provided you with plenty of encouragement going along. Among the contemporaries within this sport, I mean, you mentioned Ali Nicholson right there, but what other inspiration do you draw from, you know, going forward? You know, I mean, because there are some great women slalom skiers out there right now that are really, really pushing the outer limits out there on the course.
I think everyone is pushing the limits, and I draw inspiration from everyone. You know, you watch someone ski. I mean, we watched Kennedy ski last weekend, and she's the number one
alive, right?
Far out. This woman is pushing the limits, and it's incredible to watch our sport develop so much through these girls just having no fear. You know, there is no limits inside of their brains. They don't see something and go, oh, I can't do that. They have the mentality of, let's do it. And I think that's where the sport is changing so much. It's the men's trickers, the men's jumpers. You know, they're jumping over 70 meters. Like, it is insane to see how far our sport is coming. So I think each and every person that goes out and has that zero block mentality is inspiration. I don't think there's one specific thing that inspires me other than every other athlete that gets out there and gives it their best.
All right, let's talk about your equipment so far as your ski is concerned. Okay, I don't know if you spent an awful lot of time like searching for the ski to ride up on. So yours is a D3, isn't it?
Yep, ride or die. I'm a D3 girl. I have been riding a D3 since I was first sort of got into the sport, and I've never changed. I ride all D3. And I originally started with the Evo, I think, or there was an earlier one. I can't even remember. It was that long ago. But
yeah, that was like donkeys years ago now. But by comparison, because like slalom skis and shapes, you know, just evolve so quickly.
Yeah, no, 100%. I was on the Ion 3. I've actually switched back to my original Ion now. I did love the Ion 3. I skied super well on it last season. I've had a few difficulties this year. I haven't skied exactly how I wanted to. I've just felt a little out of whack. So I just went back to my original ski and back on it now, and I'm loving it. And yeah, I'm hoping to try. I've seen Jenna on the Ion 4, and I'm hoping to get on that ski because it seems to be working for her.
Absolutely, absolutely. A lot of skiers that have jumped onto that ski, and also the other ski as well. Not the red one, but the yellow one is
the Neo.
Yeah, the Neo.
Yeah, I see Freddie on that one, and it looks and Elizabeth are on that ski, and boy oh boy, that ski works too. I want to try it as well. I mean, the skis that are coming out these days are just incredible, and the way they're set up for the athletes and built to work for the athletes is just it's phenomenal. And to see all these every brand, you know, altering and developing their product to work with the skier it's really cool.
Okay, so let's talk about event goals. You know, I mean, we're here in Poti right now. I mean, you've got a few other tournaments coming down the pipeline. So we'll try and space this out into like three sections. There's your immediate goals, you know, with an event like this and the events going forward. Then performance goals, and then more generalistic goals going forward. So
it's a lot of goals.
Yes, everyone should have at least one goal, you know. But if you have a few in your back pocket that you want to achieve, I mean,
yeah,
all the better. So so let's talk about Poti Pro. First time in Georgia.
Yeah. Wow. Experience. I love it. I actually just got off the water prior to this podcast, and it's beautiful. What a beautiful sight that we are at right now. The water's cool. I mean, there's trees everywhere. It's super green. People are lovely. I'm loving the setup here. But yeah, no, the water's feeling amazing. Had a pretty good Femil set, which is very unusual for me. So yeah, no, I'm happy to have had a good Femils. It's feeling good. In regards to my goals, I think overall my goal this whole season, I mean, I have had a season goal for the Pro Tour, and it's to make every final. So far, we've got one left, Tony. So far, I've slipped myself back into every final, so that's pretty cool. But for this tournament, my goal is, you know, make finals and then leave nothing out there.
Okay, so you hinted at that goal of making it through to every final. I mean, that would lend itself into the second set of goals, you know. So it's been going pretty good so far, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I mean, I haven't skied exactly how I've wanted to yet this season. But nonetheless,
you're just one of those rare animals, aren't you?
Nonetheless, I've succeeded with the goal that I've had each tournament. So I'm happy, but I'm hoping to keep pushing and get a little further down the path.
Okay, and let's talk about long-term goals, because you seem to have a pretty good intelligent head upon your shoulders.
You well, know, thank you.
Yes, yeah, and I'm sure that down the line you want to achieve some goals, you know, in like a year, 2 years, 4 or 5 years down the line. So let's dig into those.
Yeah, I mean, we got Worlds in Australia in 2027, so
of course
we're looking ahead to that. Yeah, my goal there again is to make the final. You always start with the basics, Tony. You know, we get ourselves into the final, and then from there you just unleash. I like to unleash once you're in the final. But the goal is to make finals, and then I want to put my toes on that podium somewhere. So that's the goal for me, looking ahead. And then even, you know, I want to make the jump final, and I would really love to make a trick final at Open Worlds.
That seems to be a little strange.
Yeah,
for an overall skier.
I mean, Tony, tricking ain't my strong point, you know. I trick because...
Because you have to.
Yes, exactly. I do enjoy tricking. I just, unfortunately, I don't have the gift of being a flipper. I'm quite a good toe tricker, but I can't seem to find some awareness in the air. You know, I'm going to close my eyes and squeal.
You, me, both.
So, I would love to make it all three finals and get my toes on the slalom final, on slalom podium.
Okay, excellent. So... So now we kind of exhausted pretty much all the questioning, you know. So I mean it's great to talk to you. I mean it's your interview is the one that I've been wanting to do for quite a while, right?
Well, it's been good to be here. You know, love being on the podcast. I'm dipping my toes into the interviewing, and I have a lot to learn, but I'm thoroughly enjoying the learning aspect of it, and I hope to continue developing my skills, and hopefully maybe it opens up some more doors for me in the future. And
yeah, speaking about that, is there like a career path that you want to take beyond the realms of the sport, or are you just trying to slog away for as many years as you can
know
get there?
I think that life has a plan, and I like to just believe that I'm going to continue on my path, and you know, doing things like this, like, you know, jumping in the interview box and things like that, it all leads to something else. You know, you never know what doors can be opened if you don't try. So getting the Vince offering me this to do the interviews for the men's slalom was it's a good place to start, you know, and you never know what you're good at until you try. I didn't know I'd be very good with the microphone in my hand, but I've had some good feedback, so apparently I'm a bit natural. And yeah, you just never know where things will go. So no specific plan, no lined up idea of what I want to do. I'm sort of just living in the moment, and each opportunity that passes me, I am a yes girl.
There you go. And I mean, as I said, I mean, you've definitely got the gift of the gab, and you can definitely spin a yarn or two. So I certainly appreciate that as we wind up this edition of the TWBC podcast. So with that in mind, as you knock back an energy drink to try and keep your eyes awake, is there anything you'd want, anyone you'd want to thank, any acknowledgements you'd like to put out there before we kind of wrap this up?
I mean, yeah, thanks to everyone back home. You know, everyone's had a little part to do with where I'm at now, and I want to thank every one of my supporters, my parents, my sponsors, D3, Ryan and Sarah Green, Emma and Rick Haberman, everyone that's played a part in being a part of my journey. Thank you, and I hope to do you all proud.
Fantastic, fantastic, and certainly appreciate you for taking the time to participate in this TWBC podcast episode, and more episodes will be working their way down the pipe, but for now, this is Tony Lightfoot saying ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.